This is The Takeaway. I'm Tanzina Vega. And on Sunday, Americans marked Veterans Day, while across the Atlantic, world leaders gathered in London and Paris to mark the 100th anniversary of Armistice Day, or the end of World War I. At a ceremony on Sunday, French President Emmanuel Macron had some tough words for the current nationalist sentiment sweeping the West. Here he is through a translator.
Patriotism is the exact opposite of nationalism. Nationalism is a betrayal of patriotism by saying, our interests first, who cares about the others? We erase what a nation holds dearest, what gives it life, what makes it grace, and what is essential, its moral values.
World War I spanned 4 years and saw the deaths of some 14 million people. Despite the staggering bloodshed, many say the conflict remains misunderstood, both its causes and its lingering effects on modern geopolitics. One of these people is Priya Sathia, a professor of modern British history at Stanford University and the author of Empire of Guns, The Violent Making of the Industrial Revolution. Welcome to The Takeaway, Priya.
Thank you for having me.
So this is a war that claimed millions of lives. In terms of the outcome, what did this war achieve, and did the outcomes match up with the goals of the countries that were involved?
So the war absolutely transformed the world, but not in the ways that were anticipated by the players who first started it in 1914. So in 1914, a lot of the European powers who first joined the war had very nationalistic goals in mind, and it was almost sort of a test of national power and merit, right? But by the end of the war, it's about lots of other things. It's about the remaking of the Middle East. It's about a new form of global governance. It's about the loss of an entire generation. It's about the Russian Revolution and the new impetus to anti-colonial movements around the world. It's about the rise of the United States. I mean, a lot of really important outcomes emerge, but they don't neatly line up with what the players had set out to achieve.
And it was often referred to as the war to end all wars. Unfortunately, it was the First World War, which indicates we had a second. What was the war to end all wars supposed to mean?
I think once it became clear that the costs of this war were going to be really high, the human costs of it became important that, well, if we've done this, if we're doing this, it has to be a war to end all wars and a war that will settle those questions of, you know, those nationalist rivalries once and for all. But of course, ironically, it was a war that didn't really end and that produced a peace that didn't produce peace. So for the British, the war goes on well into the 1920s. It doesn't end neatly on Armistice Day.
And I'm wondering, 100 years ago, for many folks would feel completely removed from where we are today. But can you give us a sense of what some of the impact World War I had on our current geopolitical movement and other ways that it's really shaped the world that we live in?
So at a geopolitical level, a lot of the sort of conflicts and tensions and sort of the Western approach to trying to manage those tensions in the Middle East come directly from World War I, because that war was the end of the Ottoman Empire. That was the power that was kind of straddling that whole, what we call the Middle East, that area, for several centuries before. In World War I, Britain destroys the Ottoman Empire. And what comes out of it is this sort of made up, you know, nation state structure. I mean, first it's a series of colonial states, colonized states, run by the French and the British. And then it's eventually these nation states, and a lot of the borders, a lot of the kind of government structures and style, the support for authoritarian rulers in those governments, a lot of this has been shaped by British and French and American actions in the region since World War I. So geopolitically, I think that's a huge sort of legacy that we're still dealing with. Of course, beyond that, there's also the start of the League of Nations, the first attempt at creating an institution for international governance, and the heir to that is the United Nations. We had the Russian Revolution, which of course started the Cold War at a geopolitical level. Domestically also, there's so many changes. The way the British state and governments in many of the participating countries were transformed during the war, and they just developed capacities and a range that didn't go away away immediately after World War I, right? This is where we have the birth of, you know, very efficient official propaganda, for instance, state management of economies, of entire economies of people and their labor at a new level, provisions even for welfare that stay afterwards. So there's a transformation of what people expect from the state and how the state institutions operate. And in the colonies of the French Empire, the British Empire, anti-colonial movements become much, much more powerful and with a really strong following.
Priya Sethia is a professor of modern British history at Stanford University. Priya, thanks for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
Veterans, we want to hear from you. What do you think of Trump's relationship with the military? What should the military's relationship with the president be?
My name is Dee Dee Franco, and I'm from Little Rock, California. As a veteran, I believe the president should stay as far away from our military as possible. He has shown no respect for the dedication, the integrity, the selflessness, nor the sacrifice inherent in military service, but instead has repeatedly shown himself to be lazy, opportunistic, and self-serving, and treats our troops as though they were disposable, existing only for his own personal and egotistical gain.
Hi, I'm Joe Alvarez. I'm calling from Shirley, Massachusetts. True humility is not thinking less of yourself, but thinking of yourself less. As a former active Army officer, I've served under many excellent commanders, and they were all humble in that way.
Hi, my name's John Cyrus. I'm calling from Deerfield Beach, Florida. I believe the relation between the president and the military should be the military's job is to defend and plan on attack. And the president's job is to be selective, and she should be using the military as a last resort.
Hi, this is Steve from Oregon. I served in the U.S. Navy from 1985 to 1989. I'm impressed with Trump's overall foreign policy. He's been successful in dealing with hostile governments by using Reagan's playbook.
Thank you so much for sharing your thoughts. You can also join the conversation on the Takeaways Facebook page.
Support for the Takeaway comes from Babbel, a European-made language learning program. Babbel teaches practical conversation in Italian, Russian, Swedish, and other languages. Available in the App Store or online at babbel.com.
At Radiolab, we love nothing more than nerding out about science, neuroscience, chemistry.
But we do also like to get into other kinds of stories. Stories about policing or
politics,
country music,
hockey,
sex of bugs.
Regardless of whether we're looking at science or not science, we bring a rigorous curiosity to get you the answers.
And hopefully make you see the world anew.
Radiolab, adventures on the edge of what we think we know.
Wherever you get your podcasts.